Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man. We like to talk about movies, sports, whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man, otherwise known as Bruce.
Otherwise known as Bruce, coming at you with another episode into, well, it's not even a cult classic, it's just a classic at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Who Framed El Rogero Del Rabido?
That is just awful. From a man from Texas, that is just awful.
I know what I am. I know qualms about this. I am what I am.
Yes, Roger Rabbit.
Quick recap of last time. Start the movie with a very funny Baby Herman and Roger Rabbit short film, which the rabbit cannot produce. Stars, like it calls for in the script, terrible actor. Maroon from Maroon Cartoons or Maroon's Tunes.
R.K. Maroon.
R.K. Maroon pulls in Eddie Valiant, who is a man who loves his iced tea, into a scheme to take some dirty pictures of
Jessica Rabbit.
Jessica Rabbit, his poisonous wife. He thinks he's Betty Crocker, but she's poison. It's a great line. We get to see Dumbo, half the cast of Fantasia, and several other cartoon characters from our well-known cartoon universe. Before
the nightclub,
we find out Eddie Valiant loves his iced tea so much because his brother was killed by a toon.
We didn't get to the really good part, like the lead into the nightclub.
Yeah.
Because going into the nightclub, he knocks on the door and it's one of those, you have to have the password. And the password is Walt sent me.
Yeah.
Implying that the password is dealing with Walt Disney going into it. And so when he opens the door, who's the doorman? A cartoon gorilla, a giant cartoon gorilla in like an undersized tuxedo.
Yeah.
And Eddie Valiant looks him up and down and goes, nice monkey suit. And this is where you hear like really the first curse words in this movie, is because the monkey shoots, the gorilla shoots back at him, wise.
You know, he's a proverbial 300-pound gorilla, right?
Right.
Literally a 300-pound gorilla. And I love that the password is Walt sent me.
Yes.
And this is the Ink and Paint Club. It's humans only, but all of the staff, including all of the performers, are toons. So it's a toon nightclub in the real world, but it's for non-toons. This whole scene, really, if you weren't immersed in the world prior to this scene, you have to walk out of it.
Right.
Completely immersed in this world. Right. Like, you believe. No matter how like crazy the premise is or conceit is, you believe what's going on is what's going on now, because this immerses you so much in this being a reality.
And then as soon as he walks through the door, what comes across his path but a cartoon penguin waiter holding a tray of drinks?
Yeah, wearing a penguin suit.
Right. And what is on stage in the middle, because, you know, it's one center stage surrounded by tables and whatnot. And what's on the stage is dueling pianos with Donald Duck on the left and Daffy Duck on the right.
Yeah.
Oh, and the bartender is a cartoon octopus handing out drinks, mixing drinks, taking people's money. He's just doing everything all at once.
Yeah, because he's got, you know, eight arms. So right. He's doing, and at the same time, he's got this like goofy expression on his face with his tongue hanging out. He's just this, he's not like a, you know, like the doorman gorilla is like a surly gorilla.
Right. Like a surly bouncer.
Yeah. You know, the penguins are all walking around, not saying anything, just like penguins would. And, you know, blending into the background, just like, you know, waiters do. And the bartender's kind of this laughy, zany character who's serving the drinks. And so you get this impression this place is like, it doubles between a tourist attraction for people in the area. Oh, I got to go be at a toon bar, and you know, see the toon review, And also, as what we see, there are some definite regulars.
Yes.
To say the least.
And the dueling piano, the dueling Daffy and Donald, you know, they're throwing jabs at each other. And Donald,
can anybody understand this guy?
Daffy at one point goes, "This is the last time I work with somebody with a speech impediment." Wow. And Donald grabs Daffy, throws him into his piano and closes the lid. And then, of course, Daffy says his classic line, "This means war."
This means war. This is probably one of the best animated little short vignettes of all time, is the Donald Daffy dueling pianos. I mean, it's just, it's so classic. Like, you could take this out of this movie and you could watch it anywhere and it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even if you were to remove all of the, you know, where Valiant talks to Betty, where he talks to Acme. If you just put these all in a row, it would be a phenomenal little short. And it's funny because, you know, at that time period, Disney and Warner Brothers were the powerhouses of animation.
Hanna-Barbera really wasn't around anymore. I mean, they had their time, but they certainly weren't mainstream. You didn't watch them very much on Saturday mornings.
Right. It's very much like Marvel and DC were with comics. Yeah.
Right.
In that time frame, they were the big dogs. You would never have expected to see characters from both of their showcases in the same space, in the same movie, because they were competitors, right?
Right.
You know, like fierce competitors. It'd be like a place having both Coke and Pepsi. And so I'm sure when you pick one of those, you have to sign a non-compete clause to not serve the other one. I don't know.
I've seen these videos on TikTok explaining that essentially to get these characters on screen, they made a deal that because of the royalties being necessary, that anytime one of those characters was on by themselves, they'd get so much money. So the producers, the makers of this movie, intentionally made sure that if there was a Warner Brothers cartoon character on the screen, they had to have a Disney character on screen with them. So that's why, like, if you watch through this movie a couple times, you'll notice it, that no matter what, if there's Warner Brothers cartoon character, Porky Pig, Daffy Duck, Bugs Bunny, there's Disney character there. Mickey Mouse, Goofy, Pluto, somebody.
Yeah.
Now, Disney characters can be on their own no matter what. It was the Warner Brothers characters that had to have that dealt with.
During this, you know, really wonderful, literally dueling piano scene we have between the ducks, we have the introduction of one of the main players in this drama, Marvin Acme, owner of Acme Everything.
Right. The Acme Company. All the tools and gadgets and explosives and everything funny in a Warner Brothers cartoon, he is the maker. He owns the company. He is Acme.
All the rocket boots and the rocket ships and the anvils and the
anvils, the giant magnets,
yep.
The bottle rockets, the giant bottle rockets.
Yep. Any sort of Acme product.
Pretty much in every Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner cartoon. Which makes me think of that bit in Family Guy. They're like, oh, this is just like, you know, Wile E. Coyote trying to return stuff to the Acme Company. He goes in there and it's like, oh, I've been a customer here for years. Peter's like, well, I guess I give you a store credit. Oh, well, that might work. And then Wile E. Coyote's girlfriend comes in here. What's taking so long? I'm handling it.
Those are probably some of the best parts of Family Guy, are those kind of scenes where, oh, like,
the cutaways.
Yeah, the cutaways that have, you know, a zany character acting like a real person. You know, it's hilarious that they never did a full-blown cutaway for the Count from Sesame Street. They just have that conversation, you know, and that wasn't a cutaway. You know, the Count's a vampire, right? Yeah, what about it, Peter? Well, you know, they were showing him,
they were doing somebody in.
Peter asking me if Sesame Street, a children's show, has shown the Count kill somebody and feed on them for sustenance.
Yes.
No, Peter. No, they haven't.
Oh, what a segue. All right, so the first time meeting Marvin Acme, Valiant is standing there watching the stage, watching Daffy and Donald, you know, go at it. And this guy, because he's a prankster, he pulls out an ink pen and just deliberately squirts ink all over Valiant's shirt. And he's laughing the whole time. I don't know. Yeah. This shows you the civility of the 1940s, did we say?
Yeah, it's the late 40s.
Is that, you know, he didn't just outright deck him right there at that moment.
Yeah.
Right. Because today,
oh, you think, you know, that's funny, do you?
He's like, it's all panic. And then, you know, he roughs him up. And the guy's like, hey, Acme's like, hey, you know, relax, relax. It's, you know, it's disappearing ink.
Yeah, it's gone. Just look. And he looks down and it's gone. Little do we know, although we do because we've seen this movie a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
Little do we know, though, as first time viewers. And if you're not a first time viewer, then spoiler alert.
You know, this is a almost 40 year old movie.
Yeah, whatever. Little we know that this will be very important later. Mm-hmm. this disappearing, reappearing ink.
Look what you did there.
Yeah, I know, but I said spoiler alert, so
all right, fair enough.
I warned people, dang it. So very important later for the story. And then he goes to shake his hand and he gets hand buzzed. Hand buzzer, still our best seller.
And you're like, this guy, I mean, he might be fun to hang around with, but you would not want to call him your friend.
Well, on top of that, you would not want to go to like a real bar with this guy because right. He would get decked in about 5 minutes. You'd be fighting the whole bar. He's such like a cheesy, stereotypical kind of character. Like he's this balding,
stereotypical, overweight old guy that's somewhere between a funny dad and a funny uncle.
Yeah, he's balding. He's got a plaid suit. And he's got a cologne dispenser that looks like it's from the 1830s.
The little bulb on it.
Yeah, that he uses in a minute here. But before we get there, so we get the introduction to Marvin Acme. Then we meet a character we all know and love, and that's Betty.
Before we get to Betty, Valiant sits down at the table. Waiter comes by. He takes the menu, throws it right on there, and he goes, scotch on the rocks. And as the waiter is leaving, the penguin waiter is leaving, he goes, and I mean ice.
I mean ice. Freaking tunes.
And so on the stage, they finish the act, you know, with Donald trying to shoot a cannon from inside his piano at Daffy Duck at the other piano.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, they get pulled off stage. You know, they're all hooting, hollering, whatnot.
The Daffy Duck.
Right. And then Valiant gets his drink. He looks in the glass, picks up
a rock.
Right. He drops it. It's like, you know, tunes. Tunes. They put it on rocks.
Right.
Oh.
It's so good at immersing you in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously this is real. Like, obviously this is going on here.
Now we see Betty. Yeah, just like, yeah, any Valiant. And he looks over. Betty?
Cigars? She's the tobacco girl at the club.
And he's like, what are you doing here? She's like, well, business has been slow since cartoons went to color, but I still got it. And he's like, yeah, you still got it. So you see, like, in Valiant, you know, like, he's like, you know, one of my younger years, I really had a thing for her, you know, and I still have a thing for her. So again, more of that immersion, like, you know, like, it wasn't weird to him that he had a thing for Betty Boop because she was real to him.
Yeah,
you know, she's like, she's, well, not real only to just the world. To him,
but she was real. She wasn't just a cartoon,
right? She had a job. She doesn't have a job.
It's just so interesting that they bring that in, that the change from black and white to color has an effect. She's gone from being a movie star to being, you know,
it was a play on that change in Hollywood when it went from silent to audio.
Yeah.
When they moved away from silent pictures to color and audio.
Yeah. We didn't need words. We had faces.
Right. Well, it was the premise of the movie Singing in the Rain, you know? That was the whole thing. They were moving from silent pictures. They did movies like normal, but now they had to transition to sound and, you know, how that was changing. And because especially for that co-star, she had a terrible whiny voice. And they didn't know what to do about it. So they bring in Debbie Reynolds to voice over.
Yep.
I can't stand it.
I just can't stand it.
Stands it. So now the lights and the lounge come down, and Everyone's getting all hoot and hollering, running towards the stage. And
you know, this is where Acne is spraying himself down with cologne. About a quarter and a half of a bottle of this cologne.
Valiant asks, you know, Betty Boop, what's he getting all riled up? You know, she goes, Mr. Acne never misses a night when Jessica Rabbit performs. And he goes, oh, he's got a thing for rabbits because his name's Jessica Rabbit. So he's thinking it's a rabbit.
Yeah. When you think back to couples within the landscape of cartoons, they're typically of the same species.
Right.
So it makes sense that Valiant would just assume that Jessica Rabbit is a rabbit.
Right.
These three scenes, this one being the third one, establish who Eddie Valiant is. Mm. The first one establishes that he is a respected private detective who is well known in Toontown, right? Because
formerly respected.
He's able to get $100 for a single job out of RK Maroon. So you have to assume he's got some level of clout still.
He had, because when you look at his office and then you hear the way they talk about him, how he owes money to the bartender, clearly he's fallen off from grace.
Right. That's what the second scene establishes, is that he's had a falling out. He's violently opposed to the concept of working for Toons. And we find out that it's likely due to a Toon killing his brother. And then this scene sort of establishes that he still has a lingering relationship with the Toon world, but it's definitely not what it was. Like, he's obviously been out of the game for a while now. Mm. Because he knows Betty, but he doesn't know any of the other Toons. And he doesn't know that, you know, in fact, Jessica Rabbit is not a rabbit.
That is correct. She's an impossibly beautifully drawn woman with ginormous tits.
Yeah, she does have giant bazungas. It's impossibly drawn, I think, is the correct term for it, because if you were to try and fit a normal set of organs into a woman who had the figure of Jessica Rabbit, you would have some difficulty placing, I don't know, the lungs and the stomach and maybe a kidney or two. But yes, impossibly drawn, long red hair, wearing a sequin gown, purple sequin gown, something like that.
Yeah, red sequin. Strapless.
Yes. Yes. So that it emphasizes the overwhelming mud flap figure.
Well, and the giant cut down the side of the dress to make yes. sure you see her leg, all of her leg.
Yeah, all of her leg.
Something I did notice, I don't know if you noticed this too, since we're going here, is the band that's playing for her mm-hmm. are the Crows from Dumbo.
Yep.
The racist crows.
The racist Dumbo. Crows from Dumbo, yes. The jazz band from Dumbo. Yeah, they leaned into that one.
Well, this is before it became an issue. I mean, this was before yeah. they decided to take the crows out of Dumbo.
Oh, did they take them out?
I haven't seen Dumbo in forever, so I don't know. I definitely know. I don't think, did they put them in the live action?
I have no idea. I never saw the live action.
Oh, okay. Neither did I, but.
Yeah. Nobody watches the live action of these movies. They've just gone downhill so rapidly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people are talking about how terrible Snow White is, apparently.
Yeah. I think it was Aladdin was the last one we watched. And then after that, it was kind of like, eh. So there's a great line. Eddie turns to Betty and he's like, she's married to Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, what a lucky girl.
Betty all sighs and you're like, huh.
And she lifts his mouth up, like his dropped yeah. mouth, and he closes it for him.
He's absolutely stunned by the fact that this is Roger Rabbit's wife.
And so Jessica Rabbit's doing her whole bit. She's walking across the stage, pushing men off the stage, getting up in their face and then pushing them away, doing a whole tease thing, you know.
Basically, it's a 1940s, 50s era striptease.
Yeah, like a cabaret.
Not quite that far, but yeah.
And she gets to the end and she steps down from the stage, steps onto a chair, and then she starts teasing Marvin Acme. And then there's this scene where she's coming around the stage and the camera pans around her and you see like the spotlight, you know, following and whatnot. And I think that was just cinematically a really well done scene for that time, because it's like it's following a real person.
Yeah.
And it just pans. This whole thing, like having to actually do it, was probably really interesting to watch film because everybody's looking at nothing.
Right. Everybody's looking at nothing. And he's got to pan around this spot. And then he's got to give that to the animators. And they have to shade the character or light the character
perfectly
like it's being panned around. Right. So your light source isn't moving. But your directionality is, and so you've got to be able to draw that into what you're looking at. From a technical perspective, it's one of the best shots in the film, I think.
I think. So she moves on from Arvin Acme to Eddie Valiant and sits on his lap and gets really close to him and then shoves his hat in his face.
Singing right up in his face, and it's funny. You know, why can't you be a good man, basically, and get me some money?
get out of here and get me some money, too.
Yeah. It's such an interesting song.
And then it just peaks at the moment she grabs Eddie by his tie, you know, and then, you know, sings the last notes and then lets him go and walks away.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, this whole song and dance, it gets really tense and then just lets go. And the song comes to an end and everyone's, you know, applauding.
Yeah. And Eddie is just stunned. Like, he is flat out. He never got over the first stun that she's married to Roger Rabbit. And everything that preceded that was just, he got hit by that haymaker right out of the gate and has never recovered. So he's just like sitting there like, what just happened? Like,
so then we go straight to backstage where Marvin Acme's knocking on a dressing room door and it's Jessica Rabbit's door.
He's got his flowers with him.
Paying her a visit to give her flowers and telling her how great she did.
Absolutely slayed them. You murdered them. You did so good. Just lavishing constant praise.
Jessica, dear, have no fear. Your Marvin is here.
Yeah.
Valiant comes to the door and decides he's going to peek through the keyhole to see what's going on. And as he's doing that, suddenly you see a cartoon hand tap on the shoulder. He turns around, sees the gorilla, and he says, what are you doing, chump? And he goes, who are you calling a chump, chimp? We jump to the outside looking at the door to go into the nightclub and it pops open and you see the gorilla holding Eddie Valiant. You know, he's looking left and right, place to toss him, and he throws him right at the camera and he throws him into a pile of trash.
Yeah.
And he's like, don't let me catch your peeping face around here again. And so as the gorilla closes the door, Eddie Valiant starts scratching under his armpit going, ooga booga.
Ooga booga. This was another great, well done technical scene.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Valiant, like, literally hanging in the air, right?
Right.
As this gorilla is holding him. And you could see there's a little bit of a hitch in the difference between the animation and the reality. You know, the actor was being moved by a crane, more than likely, or a swinging rope set. But he gets thrown into the garbage. And it's, again, like, you come out of that whole bar scene completely immersed in the world. Like, this is just how it is in this world. Mm-hmm. And then this next, oh my gosh, the next scene is just... is ridiculous. The most hilariously ridiculous thing ever. Because what does he discover?
He's standing around looking around that near the door that he was just thrown from is a window and it goes to the dressing room of Jessica Rabbit. And he's like, oh, great. I can peep from here. So he finds a wood crate to stand on so he can peep through the window of what's going on. And Marvin Acme tells Jessica, come right over here, right here by the bed. I've got everything right here for you.
You know, when he goes down to look through the peephole, then we cut to a shot of us watching through the peephole, right? Obviously, you know, put the camera at a peephole and you're looking through it at the scene and you're sort of with the character, right? Well, in this shot, you don't do that.
No.
You see him, he you know, rummages around for a box, puts the box on stands and looks through the window, and everything that's going on inside you don't see. All you do is hear
right.
what he hears, but you don't get right. to see what he sees.
But you see him taking pictures frantically.
Yes.
So whatever he's seen is exactly what he was expecting to see. And what he needs to do to get his job done, because he wanted the camera for his job. What you hear is Marvin Acme saying patty cake and Jessica Rabbit moaning.
And I, what does he say at the end of all this?
He goes, you got to be kidding me.
You got to be kidding me.
And it's explained in this next scene. You're like, what? Well, I don't get it. Because Marvin Acme saying patty cake, and Jessica Rabbit is just moaning. you know, in a very adult way.
Yes.
And so we immediately after he says, Valiant says, you got to be kidding me. We shoot to a scene from R.K. Maroon's office and Roger Rabbit, you know, just repeating the words patty cake as he's bashing on the window.
Yeah.
You know, and clearly patty he's cake, upset.
Patty
he's
very cake, patty cake, patty cake.
He's like, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. You know what? No, I don't believe it. It can't be. Just because it's the only one for me.
I shan't believe it. I won't believe it.
Believe it.
I can't believe it.
And R.K. Maroon, this is where he gets cleared up. He goes, you're not the first man whose wife played patty cake on him.
For us, the audience, we all expect that this is innuendo for sleeping around on her husband. Like that's what we expect this to be. There was some sort of copulation episode between Acme and Jessica Rabbit. And then we get to see the pictures.
So it's literally pictures, black and white pictures of Jessica Rabbit playing patty cake with Marvin Acme.
And Roger is flipping them, right? Looking through them. Right. And he keeps each getting one. Faster and it's faster. And he's saying patty cake the whole time. And you watch Jessica Rabbit's face go from like kind of ish to like she's really ecstatic about what's going on. Just like, okay then.
Yeah, it's like a flip book, you know. It just
it's basically animating it, which was a very interesting trick they did there, basically taking a set of pictures and running them fast enough so it appeared to be animation.
Yeah, now they're pretty much doing the after for the job. You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, you're a good looking guy. Don't worry about it. You'll find another woman. He goes, have a drink to settle him down. This will settle your nerves.
Yeah.
And this is important because then the way he reacts to alcohol is like he just has this wig out moment, you know, and he just turns red and he shoots up into the air like a rocket. And it's like an air whistle noise that, you know, shatters all the glass in the room, including the decanter of sweet tea that Valiant is holding.
Yeah. Super crazy tune experience with alcohol. And after which he explodes through the window, if I remember correctly.
Valiant asks for the other half of his money and he gives him a check. And Valiant trying to comfort him, you know, because he doesn't want to feel too sleazy about it. He goes, don't worry about it. Good looking guy like you, dames will be busting down your door. And that's when Roger becomes sober and kind of like, you know, angry and like, you know, dames, what dames? Jessica's the only one for me. We're going to be happy. You'll see. Happy. H-A-P-P-I. And then he bursts through the glass and the glass doesn't like completely shatter. It's just the imprint of him.
Just like you would get in a cartoon.
Right. You know, they're looking at it because it's both the shades and the glass are in a shape. Valiant's like, well, at least he took it well. And R.K. Maroon pulls the shades and the whole thing falls down.
Yeah. For an Easter egg on this, if you're ever at Hollywood Studios and you look above at the windows in the office looking space above the Brown Derby, you will see a window that has a Roger Rabbit shape in it.
Is it the Brown Derby or is it the buffet place?
I thought it was a Brown Derby. Maybe it is a buffet place.
Because next to that window is one that says like the Eddie Valiant Detective Agency.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
After that, you see Roger kind of meandering around on the Toontown warehouse and in an alley, and he sits on a crate looking at pictures of him and Jessica Rabbit, and you know, tell me it's not true, please,
please.
It's a sad moment.
Yeah, he's kind of crying.
So Valiant goes back to his office. This becomes kind of like a sad moment, the all is lost kind of moment in this movie. Sort of. This is like an earlier one, like a softer one. Roger Rabbit's crying because, you know, his wife got caught cheating on him.
Playing patty cake with another man.
And then Valiant goes back to his place, you know, and it's sad music. And he looks at all these photos that he took, you know, the first ones of Jessica Rabbit and Marvin Acme. But then you start seeing photos of him and his girlfriend, the lady from the bar. And they're on a beach and Valiant's wearing a sombrero. And it's like these old timey, you know, these old photos. And you see him with another guy in these photos, and you can only assume that's his brother. And there are these, you know, sweet family moments of him and his brother. And you can see on his face, you know, the pain, you know, because he lost his brother. And
yeah. This is all the camera roll because, you know, when he borrows the camera to do the job, he tells the woman at the bar,
is there any film in it?
She says, yeah, I still haven't developed the ones from our trip
to Catalina.
These are the photos from the trip to Catalina. And you can see, like, Eddie's happy. Like, I don't know if we've seen him smile yet in the movie so far. But he's smiling. He's having a good time. There's another guy there. And then once he gets to some of those pictures, you can tell how heartbroken he is seeing this other guy. And he begins to, you know, really hit the iced tea hard.
Well, it pans away from him. And then you see where his brother's spot, they had facing desks with each other. And it goes through and shows how dusty it is and cobwebs and this, that, and the other thing. Goes to a clipping of a newspaper, Valiant and Valiant crack, nephew kidnapping, Goofy cleared of spy charges.
Well, you see the nephews, right? Huey, Dewey, and Louie are returned to Uncle Scrooge. Yes, yes. Yeah. So obviously, like, this points out the fact that he used to work for Toons, right?
Right.
He found Huey, Dewey, and Louie for Uncle Scrooge, the, you know, richest duck in the world.
And then it pans to a photo of him and his brother, you know, when they were cops, and they're the two goofballs in their graduating class with clown noses and whatnot. And, you know, they're not standing at attention like everybody else. Just pictures them. It shows a picture of the two of them with their dad, because it says Eddie and Tom with their dad on the road, and they're all three dressed as clowns, and it says Ringling Brothers on it. There's a picture of Eddie and Tom with
two flatfoots and a floozy going to business. So you find out, like, the detective agency was theirs,
right?
But now his brother's dead, so you realize this is his brother. The pictures of he was looking at were of his brother. His brother was killed by a Toon, and so Eddie's kind of spiraled. And you can also tell it from a perspective of the photos versus what he looks like now. There hasn't been that much time that's passed. But you also get the scene at the club preceding that tells you it may not have been that much time, but he's been out of it at least for a little while. And so you're kind of given this sort of gauge that he is... It's been maybe a slow spiral down, because if it had been a fast one, he probably still wouldn't have an office.
Well, that, you know, he's borrowing money to keep it alive.
Yeah. It's such a sad scene. Like, it's just all the way around. It's a very touching scene. It's a very human scene.
Well, like I said, it's the sort of all hope is lost kind of moment. It's the comeback to reality. We've had fun up until this point, and it's come back to reality. You know, it's no more fun and games, because, you know, a marriage is in shambles, and Eddie Valiant, despite getting the job done, doing what he was supposed to do, he still goes back to an empty office where he has no brother, and he just drinking himself to sleep at night.
Yeah.
And he's surrounded by all these memories. Once we pan up from that last photo, we see that it's daytime and that Eddie Valiant has fallen asleep at his desk, and you see a hand grab the bottle of iced tea and pick up the trash can and slam it into the metal trash can, which wakes up Eddie Valiant. and Eddie throws the guy that's there throws the trash can down, you know, just, you know, rude wake up call from a man who had a fun night of drinking iced tea. Just disturbing a man's iced tea nap. It's just,
I don't know why you would do that. That's just so mean. Iced tea naps. You can't do that to a man.
Right?
Just getting a good iced tea nap in. Come on.
You know, I'm going to see you in a couple of months, and it's just going to be walking around the whole time telling the kids, I'm just drinking your dad's iced tea. Can I have some tea? No, you can't.
No, it's time to prep for my iced tea nap later. Some refreshing iced tea. For a good time, make it iced tea time. What's your favorite kind of iced tea? Jack Daniel's brand iced tea.
Go get it for me. Go get daddy's iced tea.
Oh, nice. Iced tea.
So Eddie Valiant looks up at who woke him up from his iced tea nap and says, Lieutenant Santino, where'd you come from?
Straight from hell.
And you know, Lieutenant goes, geez, Eddie, if you needed money so bad, why didn't you come to me? And he goes, so I took a couple of dirty pictures, so kill me. I already got a stiff, the other guy says, on my hands. He goes, Marvin Acme's dead. The rabbit, he says the rabbit cacked him last night. You never heard that term before. It means killed, folks.
Yeah. It's not often used anymore.
Not really.
Ever.
Nowadays, it can be really confused for other words. So that's why yes, you it probably could don't be. Use it. So we transition to Santino and Valiant walking over to the Acme warehouse, and Santino's walking ahead of him. You see Valiant stop and he turns, and Santino's like, oh, what are you doing? And you see Eddie Valiant looking down an alleyway, and you see all this cartoon stuff happening, you know, explosions and things going crazy and wild noises, and all of a sudden in comes Yosemite Sand from the sky. Falls to the ground, bouncing, boom, running around because his pants are on fire. He's like, biscuits are burning, fire and a half. So he finds a puddle to sit in, and it just a huge boom of steam come out, and he's like, ah. And Valiant's like, I haven't been this close to Toontown in a long time. And then the town's like, all right, come on, man. Let's get this over with. And they walk in the door, and, you know, Santino's like, all right, he's with me. And it's a crime scene. They're taking fingerprints and taking pictures and all this stuff.
Yep.
And from what you can see in the middle of the warehouse is a safe with its door open. It looks like it's fallen from a high distance and, like, onto the ground. And the corner of the safe is on top of what looks like a chalked out line of a body. And the safe would have landed, the corner of the safe landed on the head.
Which is a pretty gruesome way to go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the safe landing on any part, let alone the head.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, the camera pans around. You can see Jessica Rabbit in the office with a police officer. You know, they're talking to her, you know, giving her questions and yada, yada. You go back to the main crime scene, and detectives start pulling all these stuff from the warehouse boxes. One guy's holding a stick of dynamite, and another guy pulls out a black hole from a box that says Acme Portable Holes. And the thing is like a piece of flimsy, you know, like a flimsy piece of plastic.
Yeah.
He throws it on the wall, and he's able to stick his hand in it. So it's literally a portable hole. You throw it on something, and there you go. Where it goes, nobody knows.
Yeah. So it's not like a teleportation portal, like from Portal, where his hand comes out another hole. No, this hole just goes into a hole.
And then you hear one guy say, hey guys, check this out. And he pulls from like a podium, like a lectern, inside of it, like a desk, pulls out this cartoon mallet, and he points it right at Eddie Valiant, the broad side of it, and out comes a boxing glove at the end of, I don't know, what would you call that?
It's not quite a spring. It's like a extendo.
Yeah.
Extendo thing.
Yeah, like a scissor, you know, something or other.
Yeah.
And it goes right past his head, comes right back, and then it goes right back at his head on the other side and comes right back. Because like, didn't you used to be Eddie Valiant, or did you change your name to Jack Daniels? So they're calling him a drunk.
Yeah, they're referencing the finest iced tea maker. Did you change your name to Jack Daniels? Yeah. So these would be all the guys, if you remember from that picture, right? These are all cops,
right,
that he would have been in class with, right? Ostensibly his friends at one point.
Well, former colleagues.
Right.
I don't know about friends.
Well, you know, yeah. So, but you figure the way they're sort of joshing with him, there was probably some level of joviality and likely probably more coming from Valiant than from them, at least in their early days. Because you got to figure if the Valiant boys were clowns, they were probably pretty versed in practical joking. Let's just put it this way. Jobs with manual labor that are mostly employed with men, there tend to be some level of joshing or joking or, and if you want to be a Scrooge about it, hazing.
But then those colleagues kind of turn on you when you go decide to do something like in the private sector, you know?
Mm-hmm. You're sort of leaving the force, right?
Well, you know, and like, you know, pilots, you know, like military pilots that go become commercial pilots. I mean, I'm pretty sure the guys that are still in the military make fun of commercial pilots.
Yeah, they do until they get out and become pilots themselves. Themselves, right. It's whether or not you were in for 4 years and became a commercial pilot, or you were in for 20 years and went and became a commercial pilot. Either way, yeah. That's probably where you ended up.
Right, but they still do it, right? Because until the shoe's on the other foot, I mean.
Right, yeah. But you have this sort of a feeling of payback in this, right? Because it's sort of like, you used to screw with us, now we're screwing with you.
Right.
Sort of a thing going on here. Which, if you don't understand that is what's happening in this scene between those guys, a lot of what they do here can seem just really cruel. Just sort of flat out cruel.
Right.
I don't think that's what the director was intending, and I don't think that's what's intended in the story.
Yeah, I think they're meant to be mean to him.
But it's a different kind of mean, right? It's not mean. It's mean because they have a past, and it's meant to be sort of a funny mean. It's not meant to be, I'm just being a jerk to this guy because he's a private detective and he's here, or I can screw with him.
So we go from them joshing to Valiant decides to go check out seeing the actual moment and place of the murder, and he sees a guy scraping something off the rope. Now, to me, the rope, the what's on the rope isn't white, it's yellow. And he asks him what he's doing. He's collecting paint. The guy who's collecting stuff off the rope says paint from the rabbit's glove. Like he's taking fingerprints from the scene of the crime, you know, the only gloves that, you know, would incriminate somebody. So from behind Valiant, you hear Jessica Rabbit going, "Mr. Valiant." He turns around and she gives him a slap in the face. And it's like, "Oh, I hope you're proud of yourself taking those pictures." And so then when he gets over the slap, they see them taking the body away of Marvin Acme. And the guys of the gurneys, one guy's on each end, and the guy backing up falls over a crate of shoes. And out come all these different cartoon shoes that start running around like wild, you know, just like crazy little animals all over the place.
Crazy and you see them, they're all shoes everywhere. and yeah, animals is probably the right description of kind of what they're acting like. It's like you let out a bunch of marmots or ferrets or small dogs or something, or rats or something like that.
Right. And so when he fell over the crate, you know, the gurney fell down. One of Marvin Acme's hands fell off the gurney and out came his buzzer. And so Valiant goes down to pick it up, and as he's doing it, and he's got it in his hand, you see a cane come and smash his hand from the tip. He actually gets the buzzer to go off. He's like, "Ow!" And up you see this guy just dressed all in black with a white shirt, and he's got a black rimmed hat and circular glasses, and it's played by Christopher Lloyd, which for the longest time, like, I didn't know that was Christopher Lloyd until I was much older than I'd like to admit. But
Doc
or Uncle Fester.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. This was probably, I would say, Christopher Lloyd's second best performance. It's hard to beat Doc Brown. He is fantastic in this role. Just the way he portrays the judge, the way he talks, the way he acts, the way he bears himself.
Oh, yeah.
Everything is done so well.
Well, it's not just like a judge. It's like a religious kind of, you know, like a preacher judge, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, I'm just saying that, like, that's his title. He's a judge.
Right. But I'm just saying, yeah. like you're saying, the way he presents, it's not just a judge, but it's a judge and, like, preacher and, like, you know, very pompous and holy and, you know.
Right. Those judges who sort of see themselves as the religious figures of the government.
Right, you know, the arm of the Lord.
Right.
Dispensing justice. As it pans up to him, he's like, "Is this man removing evidence from the scene of a crime?" And the lieutenant comes in, no, he was just picking that up for you, Judge. Weren't you, Eddie?" And he goes to give the judge the buzzer, and what does he do? Puts it right in his hand and gives him a good buzz. He's a number one seller. The judge decides to get back at him and say, "Oh, I see, you know, working for Toons is rubbed off on you." And he takes offense to that. He goes, "I don't work for Toons. I was working for RK Maroon." The judge's like, "Yeah, we talked to him. He said that when you showed him the pictures, you know, Roger Rabbit became quite upset. And he said that one way or another, him and his wife were going to be happy." Yeah. And so again, Valiant decides to get smart with the judge. And he goes, "Hey, pal, what do I look like, a stenographer?"
"No, Mr. Valiant."
Well, you know, his buddy tells him, "Come on, Eddie, shut up. He's a judge." And the judge goes, "Don't worry about it, Lieutenant. From the smell of it, I'm sure it was the booze that was talking."
concerned was the booze that was talking.
But he goes, it doesn't matter. He won't get the Roger Rabbit won't get far because my men will hunt him down. At that moment, this black, I don't know what kind of car it is, like a paddy wagon, I guess.
Yeah.
Comes barreling in. And as it spins out, Valiant comes closer to the camera, looks at the car and goes, weasels.
Weasels. Yeah. And the judge like, he knows who the weasels are.
Right. And he's like, yes. The judge is like, yes, they have a special talent for these kinds of things. And out comes three cartoon weasels. Four cartoon weasels.
Four cartoon weasels. So these are original characters, right?
Right.
Same as Roger Rabbit, Baby Herman, and Jessica Rabbit. And they are ridiculous. There's really no other way to put it.
Yeah, they go like mobsters. Yeah, because the one weasel, the main one's like, all right, boys, fan out. We'll find the rabbit.
You know, he's got that weasel voice. He's wearing a Dick Tracy style suit with the hat, you know, like the massively oversized fedora. It's just and the other weasels, you've got like one really big tall one who's wearing a beanie. He's got a baseball bat and a shirt that doesn't fit.
One that's in a straight jacket. Just yes. Straight up in a straight jacket.
Stop laughing.
Oh, I can't wait till we get to that. That's just so great. So then, you know, you get introduced to the weasels, and then the judge goes, all right, Mr. Valiant, do you know where you could be? And he goes, oh, Walla Walla, Cucamonga. I hear Kokomo's nice this time of year.
Yeah, just all the crazy cartoon sounding names. Seattle. Seattle.
Oh man. And so now we come to a scene that, again, as a child, I must have just blocked this out, like the seriousness, but this becomes a pretty serious scene. Like, you know, this is pretty, you know, horrific.
Yes. This terrified me as a child.
It didn't terrify me, but it should have. You know, and he's like, oh, don't worry, we'll find him. Since two towns come under my jurisdiction, I've carried out justice with a firm hand. And you see this little cartoon shoe rub up against him like a puppy, kind of like a puppy.
Yeah.
And he puts on a rubber glove, picks this thing up, walks over to like an oil drum, opens the lid, and there's this green looking horrible looking stuff. And Andy Valiant goes, what is that? And he goes, it's the judge's special mix of acetone, benzene, and turpentine. He calls it the dip. Oh, Andy Valiant goes, how did he become a judge? How did that gargoyle become a judge? And he goes, he got elected by spreading a bunch of money around Toontown, got himself elected. And then he tells him about the dip. And you see the judge take the cartoon shoe and start slowly putting it into this dip. And it starts like melting the shoe.
Yeah. It's screaming until it doesn't have a mouth.
Right.
And then it does. And then it's sort of mumble screaming.
It's just whimpering this whole time.
They get away with showing this and not getting like an NC-17 rating because it's not a human, but he's basically torture killing someone on screen effectively. Right. Like the equivalent would be a dog, right? He is slowly melting a dog. Yes. In a vat of acid is what is happening here. And it is like the more you think about it, the more horrifying this scene gets.
Right.
Like, it just gets worse and worse. The more you think about it, you see it all on Eddie's face because he's standing there. Not just aghast,
horrified,
but he is horrified. You can read it on his face because it is horrifying.
Right, because when the judge comes away with this hand that was used to dip it, it's just covered in red paint.
Yeah.
And like it's blood. And he's just, you know, moving his fingers around like he's bathing in this blood.
Yeah, especially just committed a war crime here. And And he's happy about it. Like, you see the judge smile, if I remember correctly.
Oh, it's just so awful.
If I remember correctly, he has some sort of, like, Judge Dredd level authority over the Toons. Like, he can be judge, jury, and executioner all at the same time.
More or less, that's what you get out of this, because, like, nobody stopped him.
Right.
Like, he didn't make a decree or anything. He just picked it up and threw him into this thing.
Yeah, and I want to say that is what Eddie's friend tells Eddie, is that he's got basically that kind of authority in Toontown. Or with Toons, which is absurd. Like, you have these living beings. And so you can see, you can tell this sort of sets up the premise for the rest of the movie. Like, because what you get out of this, or what you come to find out, because Marv and Acme owned Toontown, there now becomes a question of who owns Toontown.
Right.
And I think that's probably a good place to stop. We have all the major characters established, right? We've got Eddie Valiant.
Yes.
We've got the floozy. I can't remember her name.
Dolores.
We've got Roger Rabbit. We've got Jessica Rabbit and Maroon and Acme and the judge and the weasels. These are our characters, and it kind of establishes their situation at the get-go of the movie. So coming out of this, Marvin Acme's dead. He was the owner of Toontown. And the primary suspect is Roger Rabbit, and the judge and his weasels are after him. And they have the ability to kill Toons, unlike normal people.
At least the authority to do it, carte blanche.
I'm not even saying, like, authority. I'm saying I think the dip is the only substance that's been created can kill Toons.
Right.
I think they say that. I don't think there's another way to do it.
Right.
We're now finally at the to the real twist, or not twist, I should say premise of the movie. So remember, folks, we have a Patreon. If you enjoy our discussion of movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like, consider supporting us. For just $1 a month, you would help both me and Bruce pay our lovely and wonderful and talented editor who makes these listenable. You also get access to all of our Patreon content. Not normally sports, but movie, TV show, short form reviews, as well as trailer reviews and typically year end reviews of large scale projects and stuff like Star Wars and Marvel and those kind of things. So please consider supporting us. We'd really appreciate it. We have a website, patandthefatman.com. We're on Facebook, Pat and the Fat Man. Please share us far and wide. Tell everyone you know, friends, family, and people you meet on the street. And yeah, I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy. Yeah, we're going to be bleeping that out.
Bleep whatever you want out. I'm doing this because I said I was going to do this.
I'm fully aware.
Oh, stop it.
I think it's funnier if we bleep both of them.
What? But they're not going to understand what I'm saying.
Right, that's hilarious.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God. This is a dictatorship, man.
Yeah, it is. What's your point?
What is it? It's my show, too. I've got rights.
No, you don't.
Oh, God.